Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast. My name is Ashley, and I am joined today in the Think Orange bunker with my good friends.
Have you forgotten my name?
I was giving you a chance to say something more than
I've got to introduce
because I don't
myself.
Like how you just let me say hey.
I know. People are wondering what they're listening to right now because normally I'm the one who kicks this off.
I know. And because of the feedback, they're like, we want Ashley to kick it off.
Based on the reviews we're getting, the 4.5-star reviews. Can I just, hey, welcome to the Think Orange podcast, everyone. My name is Dave because you haven't said my name yet. But I just wanted to let everybody in on the anxiety that you just experienced when I said, hey, why don't you kick off today's podcast?
Well, like, listen, you were trying to change my role. Like, I just got comfortable in my role on this podcast.
No, but we all want you to take the lead a little bit more.
All right.
So I think that was really good, but I appreciated you overcoming your anxiety kick off today's podcast.
Thanks for lifting me up and giving me the opportunity.
Well, I'm just trying to be the wind beneath your wing.
I don't know that song. Do you?
You know it. Come on.
I do know it. I was trying to make you sing.
How does it start?
Did you ever? Come on, Dave. You got this.
I cannot think of the tune. Just
did you ever know that you're my hero?
There it is. They now know that they're in part of the Think Orange podcast because Ashley has already sung, and I think we're 12 seconds in. That could be a brand new record. Hey, today we've got something really special, right?
We do.
We're going to be talking to Dan Scott, and Dan's going to be specifically talking about preteen ministry. Now, Ash, you're explaining this is a kind of a new area in the whole family ministry realm, right?
Yeah, there's more of a focus than ever before in the preteen ministry, which I'm really excited about because preteen is the bridge into middle school ministry, which is where I live.
Yeah.
And it's such an important bridge.
But now a lot of people who are in family ministry probably think about bridging that transition from middle school to high school, right?
Right. Yeah.
But Dan's going to be talking about from elementary to middle school.
Yeah. I mean, the bridge into middle school ministry is just as important as the bridge out. And I think if you can catch a kid when they're a preteen and you can catch a parent when they're parenting a preteen, the better chance they have of making the jump into student ministry.
That is so good. I think you just summed up the whole episode, but really gave people some insight into what drives you in ministry. I really appreciated you just sharing. No, that was good. You were super succinct as well.
Thanks, Dave.
No, you really did a good job then.
Yeah, I'm excited. Dan has a new book coming out called Caught in Between, which I think is what you interviewed him on, right?
Yes, correct.
And I'm excited for it because I think that this is an area that it's new and this is going to be a great resource for a lot of churches.
Yeah, he's certainly blazing a trail and he's just a great human being as well. I mean, he is so smart.
So smart.
He's one of my good friends. I'm actually in a small group with him. So the conversation that we had is really just, it's like two mates just having a conversation about stuff that's important to us.
Two mates.
But in it, you are actually, if you're in family ministry, you are going to get so much great wisdom and insight that is super, super practical. So again, make sure you've got your notebook out and get ready to take notes on this one. Now, Danny's going to be part of the Orange Conference, right?
Of course.
And that's coming up very soon.
Very soon. Dan will be doing some breakouts and I'm sure he'll be talking a lot on preteen ministry.
Yeah, now I would like to know, do you know if he's going to be part of the live stream at all?
You know, I'm not sure, but you know who is going to be part of the live stream?
Who?
Dave Adamson, friends. Woo! So if you want to hear more of Dave Adamson, my co-host.
Your co-host.
Then my co-host. Yeah. If you want to hear him talk and talk unfiltered, then you want to go to live.theorangeconference.com and you can catch the live stream there.
Yeah.
And there will be some interviews and some content and Dave Adamson surprises.
I want to get our producer Kevin to make Dave Adamson is my co-host t-shirt. I think that would be awesome.
I love that.
Right?
Dave Adamson is my co-host.
No, even better. Aussie
and
Dave.
And my has to be like bold.
Aussie Dave is my co-host. So it's like italics and stuff.
Pretty much.
And I would love to see you wearing those as you come to the conference. But if you can't make it to the conference, this is why we are streaming the Orange Conference, live.theorangeconference.com. I will be hosting that. And the great thing about this, Ash, is I get to interview some of the speakers and really go into their content on a little bit of a deeper level. level.
Yeah.
I get to ask the questions that maybe people who are watching want to know. And so what we've actually had last year when I did this, we had a bunch of people who were sitting in one of the sessions. They watched the live stream live so that they could hear some deeper questions, deeper answers about what the presenters were sharing.
And you're the perfect person to do that because you ask really good questions
and you pull
really good content out of people.
Well, I try my best. So they are sponsoring this episode, live.theorangeconference.com, the Orange Conference live stream, OC18, One Voice live stream. Did we give that a big enough of a plug?
Seriously, yeah. That's like the biggest plug we've ever given a sponsor.
Well, because... You know,
because, hello, you know about it.
Aussie Dave is my co-host.
All right. Enough about the live stream. Let's throw it over to your interview with Dan Scott.
Hey, everybody. We are in the mobile Think Orange bunker. We have been taking it on the road for the last couple of weeks. And once again, we are on the road. This time we are in Dallas and we have lowered the great roller door that protects us from the outside world. And we've let in my good friend, Dan Scott. Dan, how are you?
I am good. It's good to be here, Dave.
Welcome to the Think Orange Bunker. You are a fantastic friend of the pod. You're actually a friend of mine. I want to call this out. I've got a vested interest here. Dan is a good friend of mine. Dan is in a small group. He and his wife are in a small group with my wife and I. And so I'm so glad that you get to be in here. It's like being in here with family. But what I specifically want to talk to you about today, you are the director of elementary and preteen curriculum.
That is correct.
At Orange.
Yes.
Which sounds like it could be a boring job, but I know it's a fun job, right?
It's such a fun job.
Yeah,
I work with great creative people. We come up with all the ideas and, you know, get them on paper so our churches can, you know, experience fun.
Now, I'm really excited to have you in here because I know that for the past 5 years, you have been doing a massive research project into pre-teens, correct?
Yeah, that does sound massive. Like five years. That's crazy.
Five years is a long time.
Yeah, well, we wanted to do it right.
Yeah.
You know, and just this past year, we were able to launch a preteen experience within the 252 family that we're really excited about.
Okay. So for people who don't know, what is the 252 family?
The 252 is the kids curriculum at Orange that we produce monthly.
Yep.
And we have created a preteen experience specifically geared and targeted towards this age group.
That is awesome. I know we're going to talk a little bit about that 252 stuff later on today.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to start by asking you is this. What is it that you've been learning? What is the thing that has stood out most from your research about preteens and how will that change the way that churches should be doing their student ministry?
That is a massive question.
It is a massive question. I wanted to start light, you know, just...
just dive right in. Just warm like, you here
up.
We go.
Just warm you up. So we're straight into the deep end. I know you've been learning a lot. What is it specifically about preteens that you've been learning and how will it change?
Okay, well, let me start with a conversation I had with a friend of mine who... I'm actually working on a book project right now.
Yep.
Super excited to put all of this on paper and get it out into hands of... listeners and churches all over. But I was telling my friend about this and he's like, wow, that's quite a moving target, right?
Mm.
The preteen age. And I was like, well, yeah, honestly, that's true. It is a moving target because every year it shifts.
Yeah.
And what those kids experience shifts.
Yeah.
You know, right now, preteens are about like 2005 to 2008. That's when they were born.
Yeah.
So think about it. Like they were born as the iPhone was coming into play.
Wow.
Right. So they've never lived in a world where without an iPhone.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Like that. When I think about that, you know, when I was 10 and sitting in my room listening to music on my boombox, you know, trying to like press the record button to get the right song. Like they can just download
like
anything
when the radio's playing
at any time. Like, so we are learning that first of all, no one agrees on the actual age of a preteen.
Yeah.
And why that is fascinating to me is because humans are humans and developmental changes do not happen, you know, at the same rate.
Well, hang on. What do you mean by that? Nobody can... about that, there's confusion about what
there
a preteen is.
Well,
isn't a clue in the name?
You would think so, right? You would think like
they're not kids
and they're not teens. However, what gets tricky is the physical changes that are happening in some kids.
Yeah.
So you have early onset puberty as young as 8 years old.
Wow.
Especially in girls. And so they're showing signs of being a preteen, but it's more mental changes than physical changes that really define who a preteen is.
Wow.
And so that's why no one really agrees on it, because some will go as young as 8 and as old actually as 13, which is not a preteen because they're a teenager. But especially boys have, many of them have not hit puberty, even as 13-year-olds. So they are mentally more like a kid than they are an adolescent.
Do we know what is bringing on this early onset puberty?
I don't know. I haven't gone that far in that research. But
okay, I'm just throwing it out there.
Absolutely.
The iPhone came out at the same time. I think there might be something in there. Just somebody
that's
needs
crazy.
To research that.
So that sounds like a conspiracy theory.
Totally. It is a conspiracy theory. So keep going. What are the things that you've learned, age bracket aside, like, you know, is it 8, is it 13? What is the research that's been most interesting to you?
The most interesting for me is to look at one thing that everyone can agree on. 11 is sort of a magic age with kids. At 11, the brain just sort of turns, for lack of a better word, it kind of turns into mush again. It actually becomes, it looks exactly like a 2-year-old brain.
Wow.
Like if you take an image of it and think about a 2-year-old. So a 2-year-old, they're learning sentence structures. They're learning how to talk. They're getting ready for all the skills necessary to go to school.
Yeah.
So they're starting to carry on conversations. They're walking and running and hopping and jumping and skipping and holding things and writing.
Yep.
So their brains are ready for all that. Well, at 11, the brain gets ready for adulthood.
Mm.
And the same things are happening. So if you want a kid to know something, really, really know something, they should be doing it while they are in that pre-adolescence age.
Wow. Yeah. So that impacts a whole lot, not just for
absolutely.
Leaders, but for parents as well,
I mean,
right?
Here's the thing. No one is smarter than a fifth grader. I mean, that is why that TV show worked.
Yeah.
Because they have in their brains all that they've learned from kindergarten through fifth grade. But at 11, the brain starts getting rid of things that they're not using on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
So if they're, you know, if they're learning some really hard concept in math in order to take a test, they might forget their lunch that day because their brain is like, no, I'm sorry, I need room for math.
Wow.
And my parents will take care of my lunch, so it's not a big deal.
That's fascinating. So how does this... I want to ask the question, how does this impact the church? But I think I feel like maybe there's a question before that. Is anybody in the church even aware of this?
Yeah, some are.
Yeah.
Some are.
Because advertisers are aware of this, right?
Absolutely. You know, the church is really catching up to something that the society at large has been aware of for a while. Preteen, you know, started to show up in the mid-90s, early 2000s, where businesses started to realize, companies started to realize that preteens have a $30 billion market.
That's incredible.
Which is insane. Car dealers, they realize that preteens have more influence on the car their parents buy than anything else.
Really?
And it's not necessarily that the preteen's saying, you know, like, I want this Lexus or I want this Porsche. I mean, which they do, but that's not what they're saying. It's more that parents are looking at the needs of their preteens who are starting travel sports, who are, you know, traveling all over the place, they're going to see family, they're doing all these things. So they're making their decision based on that need. And so they are targeting those kids and they are creating experiences for them that become the on-ramp to a long-term relationship with a customer. So like Abercrombie & Fitch created the store Abercrombie.
Yeah.
American Eagle tried that. You know, all of these different major stores that we know.
Yeah.
You know, Gap Kids, because they wanted to start off with the preteens, get them hooked and keep them going.
So you said something super interesting, which I'm sure as you said it, everybody who's listening, who's in student ministry probably picked up on it. These big businesses realized that the preteen years were the on-ramp for lifelong customers. Now,
absolutely.
That's it sounded very church languagey because the church wants to create an on-ramp for people to have
absolutely.
A lifelong commitment following Jesus, right?
Yeah, and brain rules would tell us this is the perfect time to create a lifelong anything.
Hang on, what do you mean brain rules?
Well, because what I said about the brain,
the mushy,
like if you want the kids to learn something, do it to them or give it that information now as they're preteens, as they're turning 11. I have this experience where I heard U2 for the first time when I was 10 years old. I specifically remember hearing the Joshua Tree.
Yeah.
It sparked this like, wait, music can like say something and do something. I ended up studying piano. I studied voice. Yeah. I played guitar. I've been a worship leader. And I have this passion for music.
Yeah.
That started when I was 10, 11 years old and listening to like what seemed like music for the first time, even though I wasn't. But you have these kids that are, you know, they're scoring a goal that feels like they've never scored a goal before, or dancing on a stage. And all of a sudden they're like, you know what? I think I could do something with this for my life.
Yeah.
And it's an on-ramp. These are the on-ramp years for adulthood. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, yes, in the church, we need to recognize that what we're pouring into these kids now, they can carry with them for the rest of their lives.
Wow. But is that from your research, is that what's happening in the church? Are fifth graders engaging?
No, it's the opposite of what's happening in the church.
Okay, talk to me about that.
Yeah. I think for the sake of efficiency, which sometimes the church kind of loves, they love to make it simple, you know, because relationships are complex. But you put kindergartners through fifth graders, you put kindergartners through fifth graders in the same room.
Yeah.
A kindergartner, I mean, they're like super young. They're just learning to read. A fifth grader is at this point, probably the top of their elementary school.
Yeah.
They do not want to be in the same room with a kindergartner. And what's happening is we are finding, as we talk to church leaders all over the country, fifth graders are checking out of church. And if they're not checking out physically, they're checking out mentally.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're going to come, their parents are going to take them. But remember what I said, tweens are influencing buying power in the family.
Yeah.
Tweens have amazing influence at this point. And there are some fights and there are some hills that parents just don't want to die on. And they're like, well, fine. If you're just going to go to church with me, come. Mm. I mean, there are church leaders that we talk to where they have to, where fifth graders going into sixth grade have to completely re-register for the attendance program because they've dropped out and they've literally kicked themselves out of the attendance.
Wow. So as the fifth grader checks out, what is happening with them? Are they leading the family to say, all right, we just won't go to church today? Or is it, hey, you just come to big church, quote unquote?
It's a little bit of both. They're probably going to big church with mom and dad, which, you know, depending on the church series, isn't the best thing for them. But I think a lot of them are just literally checking out.
Yeah. So then with that information, how much harder is it for a church to engage a sixth grader or a seventh grader if they've checked out mentally?
Well, now you're working from negative momentum.
Mm.
Because at this point, you're having to grab them back.
Yes.
And so what we would love to do is for churches to realize that they need to build anticipation all throughout the entire family ministry process. So there's always something that a kid is looking forward to kind of keep them hanging along.
Are you saying momentum week to week, or are you saying year to year? Or is it both?
Both. You know, it's both. You know, I'm a communicator, and you know, there's that rule of communication. Like if you can get them laughing, you get five more minutes, you've just earned five more minutes.
Yeah.
I think the same is true week to week in church. Like if there's something memorable that happens on stage, something that memorable that happens in the context of that circle, that important small group that those kids are in, they're going to be like, I want to see what's going to happen next week.
Yeah.
Like what will happen? What is happening? And that's what the church leaders need to ask. What is happening in the context of those groups, in the context of that church that's giving the hook for the kid to take the bait and want to come back?
Yeah. So I would love to get your opinion on this, because I think I've experienced this in my family. My two youngest daughters are like 14 months apart. So there was a period where they were in the elementary program at our church. One was at like in the highest level and our youngest was like a grade and a half lower.
Yeah.
And she loved going to church. Oh, I can't wait to go to church. Whereas our fifth, you know, our older kid was like this is terrible. And I remember getting in the car with them going, you guys were in the same thing. Like, why was it?
And that's not a unique situation. Like that is a conversation I've had in our home, you know, with my family.
Yeah.
These are conversations that we hear all over the country, you know, but what happens is, like, think about it. If you are creating the same experience from kindergarten to fifth grade, at some point that gets old.
Yeah.
At some point the fourth grader, the fifth grader's like, haven't we done this before?
Yeah.
Oh, I know this story. Oh, I've done that. Like I already know this.
Yeah.
Because like we said, no one is smarter than a fifth grader.
Yeah.
So they have all of this information in their heads, but we need to get them to do something deeper with it.
So what is that? What do we do?
Well,
what do we do in two levels? What do I do as a dad?
Oh, wow.
When I see one of my kids checking out, and I know that the on-ramp is going to be longer into the middle school years, right? That's what my theory would be. But then also, what do we do as church leaders in second, third, fourth grade to avoid this?
Those are two very different questions, but they are related.
Yeah.
They're related. Let me start with the church leader, okay, because that's kind of where we were headed.
Yeah.
So with the church leader, I think we all need to recognize, A, from our end, from the company that's creating the curriculum they're going to use, and from them who's implementing the curriculum that they use, we've inherited this idea that deeper learning is more knowledge.
Mm.
But Paul Tough, he just put out a new book that defines deeper learning as being able to take information learned in one context and being able to transfer it into another context.
Yeah, that's good.
So if a kid doesn't see how what they're learning on Sunday connects to Wednesday afternoon, they're done. Because what's the motivation to keep learning? And so we want them, I want them, to be able to be in this place where they're wrestling with it.
Yeah.
Because if they're not wrestling with it, they're not learning it.
Mm.
Like, we need to get them beyond knowledge and comprehension.
Yeah.
And they need to be able to synthesize it. They need to be able to see the issue from the other side.
Yeah.
You know, play devil's advocate with it.
Yeah.
Like, by fifth grade, everyone knows they need to be a good friend.
Yeah.
As a fifth grader, though, they're old enough that as a church leader, I can say, but are you always a good friend? Mm. Why aren't you always a good friend? Jesus says, you know, and Paul says, and the Bible says, a friend loves at all times. You know, we need to love one another. You will be known by the way you love one another.
Yeah.
You don't love one another. So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And now they're owning the learning process. So it's not me telling them, you should love one another. You should be everyone's friend.
Yeah.
They're saying, maybe life will work out better if I build stronger relationships.
Yeah. So it sounds like what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like what you're saying is we need to stop at that point giving all the answers and start asking them questions.
Absolutely.
So that they're self-discovering that learning.
Absolutely.
It's a difference between inductive learning and deductive learning, right?
That's exactly correct. Yes. So I'd rather take a fifth grader, even a fourth grader, is starting to be able to do this because schools are doing this, is they do a Socratic method where it's question and answer, which is what Jesus is doing in the temple when his parents show up and he's growing in wisdom and faith and friendship. This is what we want our kids to be able to model, that small group is the safest place for them to ask questions about their faith.
Yes.
Because they're starting to see that there's tension involved with it.
Dude, that is really strong. That is really good. Where have you been, Jesus? Did you not know I was in my father's house? He's asking questions.
Yeah.
That's so good. So then how does this translate for us as parents?
Our homes have to be safe places too.
Yeah.
You work in the church. I've worked in the church. You've done so much theological study.
Yeah.
I have done so much theological study.
Yeah.
I think we're okay. You and I are okay with questions.
Totally.
I think some parents think that questions and doubt are scary. Because they start to feel like, oh wait, are they not Christians? Or are they losing faith?
Yeah.
Where I would love for parents to realize that questions are a part of a growing faith.
Yes.
That our faith cannot exist without wrestling through the doubt.
Yeah. That's a whole mind shift change. I mean, that because what you just said, it impacts our home, but it's something that happens in church as well, right? We see somebody who has questions about faith and we say, well, they're questioning their faith, and that has a negative connotation to it, when it should be they're questioning their faith. That's awesome. It means that they're deducting learning.
They're starting to own it.
And they're starting to own it a little bit more. One of the things that I do, I think we've talked about this in small group.
Yeah.
One of the things I love to ask my girls when they get home is, did you ask any good questions today?
Exactly.
That little question that it's my encouragement as they leave the door as well. Hey, make sure you ask good questions today. That's created a mind shift in our family, which has been so incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because now they come, Dad, what is heaven really like? Hey, Dad, what do you think heaven will look like? Like, they're asking me those questions now because they recognize there's a power in asking a question.
Yes. And where that really starts to happen is in these years. As the brain is moving from concrete, literal thinking to abstract thinking, it's awakened to this idea that there are possibilities.
Mm.
And the possibilities are scary. I mean, they are contemplating eternity, an infinite number of possibilities for the first time.
Yeah.
And for most kids, that is so anxiety ridden.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, Wait, there's not just one answer to this question.
Yeah.
So as parents, we need to meet them in that anxiety and just reassure them that these questions are okay.
Yeah.
And that we're going to figure it out together and we're going to walk through it together.
Yeah. So Dan, this is so fascinating, but I mean, the big question that I'm sure people listening in their cars or in their church office are thinking, what is this? What can the church do about this? What can they do to handle this age group, this what's happening inside their brain biologically? What can the church do?
You know, I love this question. And I think when we were talking about the businesses and what companies were doing, they were creating a unique experience for a preteen kid to get them, you know, involved and engaged.
Yeah.
And I think one of the first things that we can do is we need to get them out of that room. Mm. We need to separate them and give them a unique experience based in what we know about them, based on what they like. I mean, pop culture alone, like, would tell you that they like different things than kindergartners like that they just are motivated by different things than first graders are motivated by. Mm-hmm. And they're able to take learning to a different level, but when they're in a context with younger kids, they're never going to be able to have a chance to do that.
Yeah.
So I think we need to get them out. I think we need to create a separate preteen environment, which sounds really difficult.
Yeah.
It sounds super hard because a church is like, whoa, now you're talking about money, you're talking about dollars, you're talking about, you know, all these things. When I was a church leader, we really wanted to create a preteen environment. And so we did, and we were big enough to put some money into it, where it was a unique experience that a third grader was like, I cannot wait to get to the skate park. We called it the skate park because there's a rock wall.
Yeah.
And so we had a rock wall in that room.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was simple, but it was something that they anticipated.
Yeah.
Then we built a portable campus. And now we can't bring a rock wall in because we have to leave.
Yeah.
We have to tear it down and we have to set it up.
Yeah.
So what do we do? Well, there's magic in pipe and drape.
Mm.
There's magic in IKEA furniture and soft lighting. And it was just a unique space that was off to the side that fourth and fifth graders got to go to, and it was theirs and they owned it.
Mm.
And it actually outgrew that space, and we needed, you know, to get more room because they wanted to go because it was their own place where they were experiencing. We put a video game system in there because there was no rock wall. I think churches just need to think about, how am I building anticipation throughout the process?
Yeah.
So a kid, you need to answer this for every kid. So a kid would say, I get to blank when I get to blank. So when I get to fourth and fifth grade, I get a rock wall. When I get to middle school, I get a live band. When I get to high school, I get to go on a week retreat in Panama City. Whatever that is, you're building this anticipation so they're always wanting what's next.
Yeah.
I think we fear like, oh, if our kids are just going to start to get like they're checking out, well, let's just move them up to the next thing. And all of a sudden you have fifth graders with eighth graders, which is like one of the worst ideas ever.
Yeah. That's so...
Because a fifth grader is way more like a fourth grader than they are like an eighth grader. And you just don't want that to happen.
That sounds like are we creating more transitions though for kids?
Yes, but when we hyper-focus on transitions, we retain kids. So one of the first transitions that happens is from preschool to kindergarten.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. This is more of a transition for a parent. Because, you know, your preschool environment, it's quiet, it's soft, and all of a sudden we create these elementary environments where it's loud and there's music and there's lights and there's all of these things. And these kindergartners, they come in and they're like sobbing because they're completely like freaked out by it. Yeah. And so parents are like, well, maybe I'll just keep them out, you know?
Yeah.
That's a big transition. And another big transition is from third grade to fourth grade. Education is changing. The way they interact with technology is changing. The way they interact with culture is changing. And they're starting to remember things.
Yeah.
So they know the last time you talked about Zacchaeus. They remember the last time you talked about Ruth. So how are we giving them that information in a new way that they can wrestle with?
Yeah. Because I remember you saying to me one time that in our current situation, in a current church situation, kids are actually getting lost in transition.
They do. Absolutely.
Unpack that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, they don't show up anymore.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't handle the transition well and prepare them for what's next or allow them to anticipate what's next. I mean, a big transition is even the kids that stay in fifth grade.
Yeah.
The elementary, like in lots of churches across America, around the world, I would imagine, fifth graders feel like they're getting kicked out of something.
Yeah.
Well, what if they were invited? I mean, one of the things that our church does so well is that fifth, sixth grade transition where the sixth grade ministry comes in and they like steal the fifth graders.
Yeah.
And they give them a t-shirt and they just make them feel awesome.
Yeah.
Because they know that kids want to feel wanted.
Yeah.
And our church can create environments where kids feel like they're liked.
Yeah.
And that we like what they like. And like is often more important than love in this situation because kids are starting to realize that not everyone likes them. But church should never be a place where a kid feels like they have to, you know, question whether they're liked or not.
Wow. Hey, I want you to, I'm sure that you just piqued a couple of interested ears here. What do you mean the sixth graders come in and steal the fifth graders? I know we're talking a very tactical thing at this moment, but I know the impact that had on my own girls.
Yeah, so the last Sunday of the school year, the leaders from the seventh and eighth grade ministry come in and they basically kidnap all of the fifth graders and bring them to like basically a service that just celebrates them and welcomes them and says, welcome to our middle school environment.
Yeah. Dude, I remember being in for one of my kids getting transitioned from elementary into middle school programming at church. Like I was in the middle school room bawling my eyes out because the middle school environment cheered these kids
celebrates them.
And there was so much anticipation in our house. And so what that meant was the next kid who came along, my youngest daughter, I mean, she knew it was coming. Dad, we cannot miss this Sunday.
Yes, exactly.
Because this is...
I want my t-shirt.
Yes. This is the one where they come and they take me. Yeah, they take us away and they take us into the middle school. Like it became such a big thing that, I mean, she hit middle school running. Like she hit that middle school program like I'm in. I'm all sold out for this.
Yeah. And we tend to do at these big ones, these big transitions, if we do them at all.
Yep.
But there are little transitions that happen all along the way in elementary school.
Mm.
Like even a third grader is very different from a first grader.
Yep.
So we could build an event just for third graders. Maybe it's an event that we talk about navigating scripture, or maybe it's just an event that they just have by themselves. We had a different event like K-1 did an event, second and third did an event, fourth and fifth grade did an event that only that group did.
That's good.
And so along the way, they were like, oh, when I get to second and third grade, we get a bowling party at a bowling alley with our small group leaders without our parents.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
You know, and our fourth and fifth graders got to do a harvest party and they got to, you know, do hay rides and, you know, all of these different things, but they each had their own unique experience that they could anticipate.
So Dan, how does this 2-5-2 stuff that you've been working on, how does this address that issue that and build that anticipation?
Well, our 2-5-2 kids curriculum, we start with a scripture passage and a bottom line.
Yep.
This is exactly what we want kids to know when they leave, you know, the hour. We still have that bottom line in mind for the preteen experience, but instead of starting with a statement, we start with a question. And so when they leave the large group experience, they're like, okay, as you head out, here's the first thing that we want you to talk about in your small group.
Yep.
And it's a question related to the Bible story or the Bible passage that they just experienced.
Yep.
Because we want them to realize questions are okay.
Yep.
So we're going to start with a question. We're going to ask the first question ourselves. And then in small group, they can then work through that. And then every activity, everything that's in that small group helps them unpack that question to where they land to that conclusion on their own.
Yeah. It's deductive teaching.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And for the large group experience, they've been used to more of a storyteller mindset where the storyteller is like bringing this wild, wonderful Bible story to life on stage.
Yeah.
Where in our preteen experience, we really wanted to give them more of a communicator feel.
Yeah.
Where the communicator, it's written from a place of, I've experienced this, and this is what I've learned, and this is what I hope you can learn from this. And it's more like we're fellow travelers. I'm just a little bit farther down the road.
Yeah.
But we're in this together. And so it's flipping the perspective just a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's making it a little bit more authentic and real and human.
Yeah.
Which really resonates with this age group who's starting to realize like, I see past your bells and whistles.
Yeah.
You know?
That's really good. So where can somebody go to check some of this stuff out and maybe see if it's going to be appropriate for them in their context?
So you can go to tryorangefree.com and sign up for a free trial to check it out. See what it's like. Kick the tires a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would highly encourage people to do that because I've experienced it and I think it's a fantastic product that you've got there. Also, I just wanted to ask you again, like this stuff is fascinating. I'm sure there are people so leaning into this whole idea and the research that you've done. When are you going to be producing that? I know you're working on the book. Is the book done?
The book, it's being written as we speak.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when this will air, but at Orange Conference 2018, we're launching the book and hopefully some other resources alongside it.
That is awesome. To find out more about the Orange Conference, you can go to theorangeconference.com and there's some a whole bunch of information there. But we'll leave links to all of this in our show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well. Dude, this has been fascinating. Dang, this is so good. Like I love the way that I feel like you've transitioned things that were happening at 16, 17. Like it seems like now we're treating kids who are 12, 11, 12.
Okay,
like
so, honestly, that's actually a really good point. Because generations are changing.
Yeah.
The way generations are formed are changing. I mean, I think it started with Generation X, where the front end of Generation X and the back end of Generation X really were raised completely different. I mean, just think about it. I went to college, I had a computer, I had email. My aunt, who's only 13 years older than me, she went to school and had to buy that Apple IIe, you know? Like our experiences were completely different because technology is clipping at such a fast pace that our generations are changing.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at millennials and you look at Generation Z, which is where our preteens are at.
Yeah.
And there's a book that actually came out this year called The Gen Z Effect that just talks about how this world that we're growing up in is almost post-generational because it's happening so quickly that generations are going to be like 5 years at a time because they're so different from one another.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's a huge change in the church, right?
Yeah, the church is going to need to address this. So because they're thinking by 2080, there's going to be at least 15 generations alive at the same time.
Wow.
And so if we're not starting to adapt to the younger generations coming up,
yeah,
we're going to lose them.
Yeah.
We're not going to engage them how they're engaged.
These preteens, they are the future of our church.
Absolutely.
So we have to be addressing this now.
Yes.
In order to set up the future of our church.
Yes. And because it's a moving target,
yeah,
we have to keep addressing it.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a closed conversation that's, you know, that finishes once a book is published.
Yeah.
It's the start of a conversation.
Wow.
As we become more focused on the generational differences and work with millennials who are raising alpha generation kids, and you're working with Gen Xers who are raising Gen Zs, and just this whole thing is, and yes, preteens are just a magnifying glass on what's happening right now.
Wow. Well, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much. Thank you for you spent a whole generation researching this. 5 years, right? Thank you so much for doing that, for the wisdom that you're just able to share, and for coming into the bunker to share it with everybody else.
It's been great. Thanks for having me.
You're awesome. Hey, so that was part of an interview that I did with Dan Scott about 6 months ago. And following that interview, Dan has actually been very, very busy, head down, just writing a new book called Caught in Between, Engage Your Preteens Before They Check Out. Caught in Between, Engage Your Preteens Before They Check Out. He wrote that book. Basically, he was inspired during that interview that we did, and he started writing a book. And so
it all started there.
So I've invited Dan into the bunker, the Think Orange podcast bunker. Dan, you've been in here a few times now, right?
I am a friend of the pod.
You are definitely a friend of the pod. Kevin's dad, get him a t-shirt if you can. Is that all right?
Sure.
Brilliant. he's super excited about getting you that friend of the pod.
I can tell.
You can tell, right? Just, hey, Kevin's dad, keep it down. Keep it down. Hey, so you have written this new book, and I wanted to bring you in because we wanted to follow up that interview where you were talking about a whole bunch of fantastic concepts that have now become very concrete, concrete enough for you to write this book. So tell us a little bit about Caught in Between. What's it about?
Caught in Between, I mean, honestly, the tagline pretty much, you know, sums it up. Engage your preteens before they check out. What I'm trying to do, there's two sections to the book. There's a first half where I'm hoping to create empathy for the preteens in your church, that you start to get a picture of how they're living and what they're walking through day in and day out, you know, throughout a week of their life.
Yeah.
The back half of the book, the second half of the book, gives you super practical ways that you can implement a preteen strategy to engage them and, you know, and to make sure that, you know, we talked about in that interview that kids are getting lost in transition.
Yeah.
And this hopefully ensures that that doesn't happen.
Okay.
That they get caught in between.
Yeah. So who is this book written for? Primarily.
Primarily anyone who works with a preteen.
Yeah.
You know, you could give this to your preteen small group leaders and the first half will give them everything that they need to make Sunday small group a better experience for them. But church leaders, youth pastors, children's pastors, family ministry pastors, the back end will give you the tools you need to think about what a preteen ministry can look like in your specific church.
Okay. So when it comes to faith, when it comes to leading preteens in a church environment, what are some of the things that your research, I mean, I'm looking at the manuscript of it is like an inch and a half thick. I know that you've put, you know, full disclosure, you and I are good mates. You've been going through this for a long time right now.
Yeah.
We've had so many great conversations about this, but I would love to know, like, what are one of the things that you found during your research that is a real obstacle for preteens when it comes to faith?
Yeah. Okay. So there's insiders and outsiders. We all talk about that, you know, all the time, like kids that have grown up in the church. Let's talk specifically about them right now.
Okay.
So if these would be like my kids,
your kids. Yeah.
Yeah. If they've grown up in the church, they've heard these stories. They've heard you know, about David and Goliath. They've heard about Abraham
and Noah.
You know all the stories.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, somewhere around, you know, 10, 11 years old, as the brain comes of age and starts to think in terms of abstract thought, kids start to realize that their life doesn't necessarily match up with what they feel they're promised in God's word.
Right.
They know that they've memorized probably as a little kid, you know, rejoice in the Lord always.
Yeah.
I will say it again, rejoice. Yeah. And they're like, yay, I love being happy all the time. It's so great. And then all of a sudden, you know, as a preteen, they're like, I'm not happy all the time.
Yeah.
My life isn't joyful.
Yeah.
And now they're starting to ask questions, and I think they're starting to kick against a foundation that they, you know, have been given. So if you look at the preschool and the early elementary years as these building blocks of faith that we're giving them language, we're giving them the stories.
Yep.
By the time they hit 11, they're going to start to kick against those.
Wow.
And I would pray that it's not a full-blown demolition, but that it's more of a renovation. That as they head from their preteen years into adolescence, that they're not completely destroying the house and starting over, but it's more they're kicking against it, and they're breaking down what no longer works in the abstract mind.
Yeah.
And they're just renovating and rebuilding the structure that they'll live in, you know, as an adult. And I think we go through throughout our entire lives at different points, but this is the first time it's really going to happen.
Yeah.
And so the environment that you create in your church needs to give them the safest place to make that possible.
So it's moving from those childhood stories to more, I don't want to say adult questions, but more advanced questions.
Like, absolutely.
And so those stories that seem so childish, you know, with the picture of Noah's Ark with the giraffe head sticking out and things like that.
And then all of a sudden they're going to realize, wait, we don't see all the dead floating people in the water.
Wow.
You know?
Woo! So they're starting to think about those things.
Like the actual, whoa. God destroyed everything and everyone. And now they have a question about God. So I thought God was, you know, and how are we meeting them in those questions?
Okay, so I want to make sure that I understand this and so that our listeners understand this. The first half of your book is about why that happens, why and how they make that transition from, look at all the giraffe's heads sticking out of Noah's Ark to, hey, there's a whole bunch of dead bodies floating in the water, which I think that's, it's blunt, but it's a powerful picture.
Yeah.
And the second half of the book is a practical step-by-step on how you can lead a preteen through those questions and through that.
Yes. And create an environment in your church.
Yeah.
You know, every chapter in the back half of the book has a series of questions for you to think through your own environment.
Yeah.
You know, what's the space that we've created? What's the small group culture we've created? What's the large group culture we've created? Those sorts of questions.
Would this, as I'm hearing you say this, I'm actually thinking, I think I went through this when I was 40.
I started to kick down the foundation
and started to renovate my faith.
Yes.
I like the way you put that. You don't want them to destroy their faith, tear it all down. You just want them to renovate their faith so it becomes a more mature place.
Yeah, but I do think that, I think you're right that we do this throughout our lives.
Yeah.
That there are moments where we read something new or we hear something on a podcast and it reframes how we think about, you know, everything, especially our faith, you know, especially those existential questions of why am I here? What are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, all of those things. Your preteens are just starting to get there. And what's tricky is that in a circle, half of the kids will be there and half of them won't be there.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, the book kind of, it spells out, these kids are in transition. So sometimes they're going to think like this and sometimes they're not going to think like this. And it's just this back and forth play that, you know, your environment still needs to speak to them as children.
Yeah.
but hint at them as adolescents.
Wow, dude. So I get the feeling, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the sort of thing that could lay the foundation for an adult, like, you know, decades from now.
Absolutely.
Who is still going through this process.
Well, yeah, I mean, so in the book, I share these moments from my own preteen years that were significant to what I think about life now.
Okay, I want to unpack that with you. Because I think this is real, right?
Yeah,
what were one of those things for you when you were a preteen?
You know, I love music.
Yeah.
I love music. Like, I'm obsessed with it. That started, I started piano lessons in fourth grade. You know, and I heard U2 for the first time in fifth grade.
Yeah.
I heard Def Leppard for the first time in sixth grade.
Wow.
And, you know,
you're aging yourself.
I am totally aging myself. But here's the thing. That started there and it never stopped.
Yeah.
So it's that kid who has, you know, played soccer for a really long time, but all of a sudden it means something different.
Yeah.
And that often happens during the preteen years where they're seeing themselves as this person who can do these things. Wow. I'm good at this. Wow.
Yeah, you know,
and even your experience of church, you know, during those preteen years, like these are like the first major memories that we really gravitate towards.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the movies we remember, like Goonies, you just have these really concrete memories of that time in your life.
Yeah.
And, and then they play out.
I've heard Andy Stanley say, you don't want to provide childhood answers for adult questions when it comes to faith.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hearing you say, essentially. This is where they're transitioning, where they need more adult answers.
Yes.
Because they're starting to think less about faith in a childish way.
And it could be you need to break them down a little more simply.
Yeah.
Or at least give them something like a concrete experience that can be a launch pad.
Yeah.
For the adult answer to the question, because they really still are vacillating between the two, you know, concrete and abstract thinking.
Yeah.
But yes, you are right.
How important is it for people who are leading students in the preteen years, and it might even lead into the teen years? How important is it to not always provide completed, well thought out answers, but to let there be a little bit of space, a little bit of doubt, a little bit of an opportunity?
It's huge.
To continue questioning.
It's huge. It's actually why 252 Preteen, rather than landing them on a bottom line, we give them a question.
All right, what is 252 Preteen?
Oh, that is the curriculum that Orange puts out for preteens.
Yep.
It's part of the 252 Kids umbrella.
Yep.
I think we talked about it.
Because
we've just been launching it. We're actually just starting our writing our second season.
Yep.
We're really excited about it. But in the book, I talk about the difference between landing planes and tying bows. And when a lot of communicators, they tie a bow on it.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden you get a package and here it is. Here's everything that you need to know. It's in this box. You can take it out at a different time if you want. You can open it whenever you want, but here's this package, right?
Yeah.
What I think we need to do in a preteen environment is land a plane, which means when the plane lands, you're not at your final destination.
Yeah.
You are just completed with part of the journey to the destination. Like you still have to get out of the plane, get your rental car or the Uber, you know, drive to the destination. So your large group communicating, your large group experience needs to land a plane and doesn't shut down the brain from thinking about it further.
Yeah.
So when then we start with a question.
Yeah.
Because we want them to know that this is the safest place for them to ask questions.
Yeah.
And if they can own their learning,
they're
more likely, you know, to hold on to it. So we want small group leaders to know how to ask good questions.
Yeah.
And what sort of referencing what you just said, be totally cool with saying, I don't know.
I absolutely love that. You know, I do a lot of work on social media.
Yes.
And one of the things that I tell churches all the time is when it comes to social media, question marks are greater than periods.
Yes.
And this is what I hear you saying, that that's just not a social media. That's not just a 2D thing. That's a 3D thing as well, especially in the world of preteens.
Yeah. In preteens, early adolescents, they need to realize that questions are okay.
Yeah.
Because they're asking them. And I think if you grew up in the church, you're scared of asking the question that puts into question everything you've been taught.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why Abraham left everything and just followed after this God who called him. Yeah. Like, that makes no logical sense to me. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's cool, right? That he decided to take this adventure and he somehow must have believed that, you know, God was trustworthy.
Yeah.
And I think what we can help them understand is that while there are things we don't know about God, there are things we do know.
Yeah.
And continually bringing them back to, hey, it's okay to have this question, and some of these questions will never be answered.
Yeah.
But in the meantime,
yeah,
these are the things that we can cling to, because the questions, they bring initial anxiety to the kids.
Yeah.
Because it's really shaking everything they've known about anything.
Yeah.
And infinity, that's crazy. Like, you mean just like on and on and on, and like, and all of a sudden they have like, they're hyperventilating, like thinking just about heaven.
Yeah.
And you can be like, okay, yes, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
But here are some things that aren't weird. Like, here are some things that we can cling to and that we can know, and continually grounding them in truth.
Yeah.
Along the way.
Is there a generation of student leaders, student ministry leaders who are already adopting this? Because as you're talking, the thing that keeps coming to my mind is that's not what I was told when I was in church as a teenager. I was like, you talked about fear, the fear of us. I had that fear until I was like in my late 30s.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't want to get to a point where I realized my faith was a house of cards.
Yeah.
And if I ask this question, that leads to the next question, the next question, the next question, the next question, and suddenly the whole thing comes down, which now I know in my 40s, that's not true. Yeah. And it's actually okay to have questions, and that actually leads to a deeper faith. But I feel like what you're doing with this book is setting up a generation of Christians that don't have that, don't live with that fear. Would that be fair?
I would love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You and I listen to lots of the same podcasts.
Yeah.
And I had this thought. We're listening to a generation of people unpack their faith. They are deconstructing it, right? We know why they're deconstructing their faith.
Yeah.
They're telling us.
Yeah.
You know, for the first time, we know why people are really leaving. It's not programming issues. It's not the fact that your music is better than my music. They're not leaving because of that.
Yeah.
They're leaving because they were never able to ask the questions that they had and feel like they wouldn't be, you know, thrown out of their church.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I'm saying, no, that needs to be a part of what we do.
That's so good.
We need to be able to have a generation unafraid to ask questions because God is truly bigger than them.
Whew. Dude, that is phenomenal. And as a parent of three teenage girls, and you're a parent, how old are your kids?
Same.
So
yeah.
I
have preteens and teens.
So this is live for us.
This is absolutely live for
us. And so I know that this is a topic that brings you life because you're a dad to this age group.
Yeah, we're living it.
Yeah. But you, like, what I love about you, man, is you just want to equip every, like, churches across the country, the world, whatever.
Yes.
To allow teens and preteens to grow up with a much more developed version of faith than maybe you had.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would that be fair?
Yeah, that would be fair. That'd be fair. It took me going to seminary to realize it was okay for me to unpack things like this.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have to pay like, you know, $40,000 to be able to, you know, feel that, you know, they should be able to just
pay $11 for the book.
Sure.
So, Dan, where can people pick up a copy of Caught in Between? Because I'm sure every student leader who's... Well, I'd like to think... can I just say this, actually? As a dad, I would like to think that every student leader is going to pick up a copy of this, because I don't want a generation, I don't want my grandkids to be growing up with the fear
that
the house of cards is going to fall down like did. So where can they pick up a copy of this awesome book?
So if you go to orangestore.org, it'll be on there.
Yeah.
And it'll also be on Amazon, you know, to do the one click.
That's perfect.
But yes. So those are the two places you can absolutely get it.
Hey, thank you so much for not just coming into the Think Orange Bunker. Thanks so much for being a friend of the pod. And dude, seriously, for writing a book that I think is going to have generations worth of impact. I honestly think that, because as we've been talking, that whole idea of growing up with a faith that was built on fear is so true. And I bet every student leader who's listening to this podcast experienced exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So, dude, thank you so much. You're welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You are awesome.
Wow, Dave, that interview was incredible. I definitely felt like I was, you know, sitting around the table with my two mates talking about something I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, I know that you were, as you were listening to that, I could see you taking some notes and your eyes were lighting up. You are super passionate about this topic, right?
I am. I'm so mad I missed that interview, because I wanted to just engage in the conversation, because I think what Dan brings to the table is a lot of wisdom on adolescent development. And I think... that understanding what's happening in the brain of a preteen changes the way that you want to engage with preteen ministry.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important. I mean, preteen years are the beginning of middle school. And like I said, it's the bridge in, and what's happening, you know, people are, you know, our kids are going through puberty earlier and earlier.
Yeah.
So what's happening is when puberty starts in preteen years and continues through the middle school years is our students are beginning to be able to think abstractly. And with the abstract thinking muscle comes the ability to be self-aware and the ability to doubt and ask questions and the ability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes.
That was probably my favorite part of the interview, when Dan talked about churches creating spaces where kids can ask questions that are beyond just the childhood stuff. And I know that you're passionate about this, and I know that you have vastly more experience than me when it comes to middle school ministry. I would love to know, what are some of the things that you've experienced kids asking when they're in that in-between phase?
Yeah, I mean, they're asking things. Like, I remember one time sitting in this small group with the sixth grade girls. You know, we're talking and one of the girls says, "So if heaven is such a great place, why was Satan so unhappy?"
Whoa. Seriously?
Dead serious. And I'm that's a really good question.
Because
like up until that point, you know, she's been told heaven's this great place.
Yeah.
Satan wasn't happy there. And he's this fallen, you know, like the story of how this happens.
Yeah.
And then she's thinking deeper, like, well, why wasn't he happy there if everybody's happy?
Wow. What was your answer?
I said, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Let's look it up.
And that's Dan's point, right? We don't have to present them with all the answers. We just need to create spaces where questions are okay.
Yeah.
That's what I love about what he's talking about in the book. That's why I love sitting around. That's why Dan's my mate, because we sit around and we talk about this stuff. When I said to him, I only started asking those questions when I was in my 40s. I mean, that's real.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have somebody like Dan, who's a really good friend, who I can have those conversations with, it's incredible for me. I feel like I'm caught in between, quite frankly.
We all sometimes.
What did you say? It's what's that muscle that's developing?
Abstract thinking muscle.
I think maybe my abstract thinking muscle is only just now kicking in.
Well, you know, it is kind of like a wimpy arm muscle. Like, it's there, but it's not going to actually work well until you like work it out in practice. So that's what you do with preteen and middle school ministry. I mean, you help them work out that muscle, develop it so that they're able to ask questions. And sometimes people get scared of questions, but that's how they develop a faith of their own. Like, questions aren't scary. Silence is. And when they're not asking the questions, because then they don't fully understand it for themselves.
Questions aren't scary. Silence is. That is incredibly insightful.
I'm so excited right now, by the way.
Why?
I love talking about this
stuff.
You sure do.
You are lit up. It's incredible.
This is my heart. So I'm so excited. I hope you're able to share this episode with your leadership team, because I think creating a unique space for preteens to be preteens.
Yeah.
And if we can help bridge that jump from children's ministry to student ministry, I think that we'll see more parents stay engaged through some really, really tumultuous years.
Yeah, yeah. So make sure you share this episode. Make sure you pick up a copy of Dan's book as well. Not only is he incredibly wise and insightful, but he's just a great writer as well. He writes very conversationally. He writes as he speaks. So make sure you pick up a copy of that. It's available at all those places that he already mentioned. And while you're doing that, while you're writing and looking around for things, make sure you leave a review and a rating on iTunes. We would love for you to do that. Subscribe to this podcast. If you haven't done that already, you can simply hit the subscribe button on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. That is such a huge thing for us. Goes such a long way to helping more people see this content. Also, check out our show notes. The show notes are on thinkorangepodcast.com, thinkorangepodcast.com. And as Ashley said, we would love if you could share this with a friend. Ash, anything else to add?
Well, I would just say, hey, if you're coming to Orange Conference, come say hi. Yeah. Tell us you're a friend of the pod. If you're not going to be at Orange Conference, jump onto the live stream so at least you'll get to hang out with Dave. I'll try to pop in if I can.
You should totally come and pop in. And if people are going to be at the Orange Conference and you haven't got a Friend of the Pod t-shirt, make your own. We will take photos with everybody who makes their own Friend of the Pod t-shirt, or even better, Aussie Dave is my co-host t-shirt. And we will give away all the contents in Ashley's desk if you are doing that. That's the only thing I can think of to give away. So I don't know what's in your... I know there's some
candy. A butterfly in a jar.
I've seen that butterfly in the
jar. Its name is Skittles, because when it flutters around, it sounds like somebody's pouring Skittles in a bowl.
Okay, so you know you just committed to giving that away to somebody who's wearing a...
No. This is... Skittles is my friend. She sits on my desk. She's not a real butterfly, by the way, so I'm not like torturing this thing.
So everything but Skittles in your desk is up for grabs for people who are wearing a Friend of the Pod t-shirt, or a hashtag FOTP t-shirt, or a hashtag Aussie Dave is my co-host t-shirt.
Drawer number two is full of candy. I've got Sweethearts, Ring Pops.
You will get Sweethearts and Ring Pops if you're wearing one of those t-shirts. So make sure you come up and say hello. And Ash, you're going to take photos and sing with everybody who comes up and says hi.
I totally will.
That is awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this one. We'll see you on the live stream or at Orange Conference 18.
Yeah. I'm supposed to be doing this part.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Remember, I started this episode?
That's true. Go.
What am I supposed to say?
Let's just walk you through this. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for joining us.
We hope.
And remember.
That's right. Ready?
I'm just jumping in.
Okay,
Dave.
Go.
Thanks so much for joining us. We hope to see you at Orange Conference or on the live stream. And remember, when you think next generation,
think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.